When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's hosted by me, Kyle, and him, Robbie. Today, Robbie, I am coming at you live from Greensboro, North Carolina. I sure do love North Carolina, so I am fired up about this episode. I'm in Greensboro. Let's go. How are you doing?
Wow. Couple things. One, I'm doing really well. Full disclosure, I started recording this without my microphone actually plugged in.
So a rough start.
I'm sitting here so thankful that I noticed before we just got all the way through this episode, because it sounds like exactly the sort of thing that I wouldn't notice. That said, I love Greensboro.
We were just talking, you and I have had that happen twice. Two nightmare experiences.
Oh, man.
The first time we recorded Guardians 1, we had to redo the whole thing, and that was brutal. Because, again, we put all of our energy into this, Robbie. So, yeah. Like, when we're done, we're, like, wiped. And then all of a sudden, we're like, oh, crap, this isn't going to work.
I think it might have been Spider-Man Homecoming that we had to redo a chunk of.
The other one, yeah.
But
Far From Home. Yeah,
but
okay.
But man, yeah, that Guardians one. It's funny. I have back when I was making records, there are a couple of songs that I was making. This was definitely no big deal because it was the first album that that I ever did with some buddies of mine that you know from Nashville. But this was back when we were all in Louisiana, and it was the first full length record we had done. And there was one track in particular that had come out so well. Like, it was such a cool track, and it had really morphed the song from what it had been when I had first written it into something totally different, and we were so excited about it. And then our producer's computer crashed.
Oh, no.
Like, his hard drive was corrupted, or however all that stuff works, and it was just totally, fully irretrievable. But enough time had passed to where we couldn't remember what exactly we had done on that track, you know, because this was like months later. And so we could just never really recapture whatever magic we had captured that one afternoon. And so it's always driven
That's
me
why
crazy.
Your career just went downhill from there.
Exactly.
It just never
That's
worked out
thing.
After that.
Yeah, right. I mean, people heard the song that wound up on the record and they were like, wow, this really feels like it should have been better. It's hard to place, but
it's missing something. I don't know what.
But I always think about that with these, you know, like that Guardians episode. I remember us finishing being like, so like, that was so fun. Such a great, yeah. You know, because it's a fun movie and you want to make sure that you do that justice in the way you talk about it.
Yeah.
and then the
such
realization
good chemistry, guys. That was so fun. Great work. And then it's like, oh no.
So we waited like weeks to redo it because we just like our morale was so blown that we were like, we have to recover. But anyway, that's not going to happen today because we're all plugged in and ready to go. I did want to say, I am a huge Greensboro, North Carolina fan.
Wow.
And I'm not just saying that. I've played up there several times back when I was doing the kind of college circuit. A lot of Robbie music talk in this episode.
Yeah, this is, wow. It's just turning into the Robbie artist career podcast. Okay.
Yeah, if we can just, you know, start having segments where I just recount tales. Candace and I also, several years back, when we were living in Little Rock, made a road trip up there, which is a fairly long drive, to see Jason Isbell and Josh Ritter, who are a couple of my favorite artists, and they played at this little amphitheater in Greensboro, and it was like October, and like mid-October in Greensboro, North Carolina, watching a show outside is, I think, maybe the most ideal situation for me that could ever exist, because it's just like fall in that part of the country is the best, and North Carolina in general is just a really, really beautiful state. So I'm jealous a little bit.
North Carolina is underrated. You know how I like to rank things? At one point when I was in the car on my musical career with my boss, Josh, we got bored and I ranked all 50 states. And the shocking one was North Carolina came out at like 4 or 6 in my rankings.
Wow.
Crazy, but I was factoring in everything I could, and I'm not going to start with the bottom of the list here because I don't want to offend anybody. But if we have any North Carolina listeners, I was a fan. Also, by the way, everyone I think out there knows I'm a massive golf fan, Rob.
Uh-huh.
And I'm staying like an hour away from Pinehurst, and so after work one day, I drove down to Pinehurst and got hooked up with playing Pinehurst number 9. For those of you who are golf fans, you know that's a big deal. If you're not a golf fan, Pinehurst is just like a top golf destination with 9 courses. Now 9 is kind of their like throwaway one, but I put that all out there just to say, you know, I travel a lot and maybe some of our listeners out there have golf connections. So hit your boy up. If I'm in your area, hit me up. Let's golf. Hook me up with some nice golf. I love it. Just like I rank everything here, I rank all the golf courses I play too. So
just
throwing that out there.
At some point, we're just going to have to put in a little segment where you give us your ranking for random states. I hope you have that written down somewhere because I'm genuinely curious to know what the last state is and why it's Mississippi. Easy.
Wow. Shots fired. I'm sorry to everyone out there from the beautiful state of Mississippi. You're not going to like where I had Louisiana either.
Oh,
my
gosh.
It was towards the bottom.
the reason I have the fired shots of Mississippi so quickly is because Mississippi is the only state that we have that we can claim some sort of superiority to in certain ways. Otherwise,
this is getting intense.
We're going to have to cut all this so that we don't offend anybody.
This will not make it into the episode, guaranteed.
Now that we've talked about everything else, maybe we should talk about some Marvel stuff.
Yeah, this is kind of a crazy new era for us, Robbie. This is what I want to call Friends from Work Season 2.5. And here's why. Obviously, the season 2 kickoff for us was a big deal because it was the first time we were covering new content. But this is kind of 2.5 because we're about to go through a little stretch here of new characters. And you and I were briefly chatting offline, and we haven't had like a new main hero in quite some time. Really, we thought since maybe Captain Marvel in 2019, because you know, Far From Home was a huge movie, but we all knew Spider-Man. And obviously these shows have been awesome, but we knew Wanda, we knew Vision, Falcon, Bucky, Loki, etc.
Right.
We're about to go through an era of What If, which is our first ever animated show that's messing with all different scenarios of stories you've already heard. That's different. Then we have Shang-Chi and we have the Eternals, both of which are characters we know very little about, right? It's not really until Hawkeye gets going and Spider-Man that we get back into some of the characters we know. So this is just going to be a little bit of a season 2.5 for Friends from Work.
It's interesting even talking about Captain Marvel because while that wasn't that long ago, I mean, it was only 2.5 years ago, I guess, it, because of the way it placed her in the timeline, didn't feel as much like a new chapter, you know, because it was slotting, like we have that after Captain America, the First Avenger in our watch order, and nothing in that movie happened post Infinity War, except for just that one little credit scene. So this really, like, these two movies are the first time in a long time that we've had like kind of a new chapter taking place, like, you know, chronologically after the things that we've seen with new characters. Like, and I think I'm not trying to split hairs there. The reason I point out the distinction is, like, we all went into Captain Marvel knowing where they were going to slot it, more or less, because they had sort of shown that in the trailers. From what we've seen, there's like way less connective tissue between Shang-Chi and Eternals than I think there was with Captain Marvel. I could be wrong on that front, but I think it's different, but it's also really exciting because it's the first time we're kind of like, all right, I guess like this could just sort of go anywhere.
Yeah, true. Speaking of going anywhere, Robbie and I are watching Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings on Tuesday. Let's freaking go. Let's freaking go. We're going to watch it together in person again. And the little rumblings we've heard from people on the inner workings of this film are very positive. People are very excited.
Yeah.
I've heard very good things. And we're seeing it, I mean, way earlier than we thought, to be honest, right? This is significantly, and I couldn't be more excited. So, new character, new era, and a second time watching it with you in Austin.
Man, and that happened so quickly. I mean, like,
it snuck up on us.
We didn't even know we were doing this till like 5 days ago or 6 days ago.
It really did sneak up on us.
But yeah, I'm really encouraged by the little bits of things we've heard, and on the Eternals front, the fact that it's being helmed by Chloe Zhao is really encouraging, just given the year that she had with Nomadland. So I do think, while on the one hand, these things are so different and it's hard to know what to expect, there are a lot of reasons right now to be excited about both of them. And Shang-Chi is very much at the front of my mind right now as I'm sort of counting down the hours until we're seeing yet another new Marvel Studios film in theaters together. That's just crazy. I love it.
And we're about to get Angelina Jolie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's
wild, man.
Wild. That is wild. Didn't think we'd ever be there. And here we are. Look at us. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought?
So I got so much I want to talk about today, Robbie. We obviously are going to get into talking about What If Episode 1 with Captain Carter. And that will happen in a few minutes here. But on our Slack and on our Instagram, I did like a Q&A, and part of that, I asked people if they had any questions, because we are bringing back the community question of the week. Let's go.
Yes, it's been a bit.
But part of that as well, I got a variety of things that spurred on some ideas of things I wanted to talk about. So we have a community question of the week, and then I have some really big picture things I need to like assess before we get into What If. Okay.
I love it.
Okay. So our community question of the week is brought to you by our friends at Squarespace. Squarespace empowers millions of dreamers, makers, and doers by providing them with the tools they need to bring their creative ideas to life. On Squarespace's dynamic all-in-one platform, customers can build a website, claim a domain, sell online, and market a brand. Robbie and I have done that with our Friends From Work website,
yes,
and we love Squarespace. It's been incredibly easy for us to use. The entire thing you see at the FFWpodcast.com is built by me and Robbie's wife, Candace, just using Squarespace. And can I add, we do all of our t-shirt selling through Squarespace's commerce link, and that's been really easy.
Yeah, I feel like we have a lot of listeners that we hear from that have their own sort of creative projects going, whether it's podcast or something else. And I really feel like I can't recommend Squarespace highly enough for that sort of thing, because like you said, my old music website was totally done by Squarespace, and it was initially designed by Candace, who is a graphic designer brand manager full time and uses almost exclusively Squarespace, you know, so another little plug. But what was great is I am actually pretty horrible when it comes to technology for being someone living in 2021 that was born in the 90s. And I was always able to kind of go in and change things on my own on that website, which says a lot, because if I can figure it out, then anybody else can.
Yeah. So if any of our listeners out there are graphic designers or photographers, producers, gamers, real estate brokers, anything like that, Squarespace is perfect for you. So I want you right now to go to squarespace.com/friendsfromwork, all one word, squarespace.com/friendsfromwork for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch your website, use the offer code friendsfromwork to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Check out Squarespace. Okay, Robbie, the Squarespace question of the week is, if you could come up with your own what-if situation, what would it be? And thank you, Daniel, for this question. And if you want, I can start here because I got a second to think about an answer and you have not been prepared for this. Here's what I thought about. This is a little bit dark, okay? We're going dark here.
Okay, I like it. I like it.
I started thinking to myself, what if Captain America had taken that last blow to Tony and killed Tony Stark in Civil War?
Oh, wow.
Because he's got that shield to his head, and I thought, okay, let's just think about if he had actually decapitated Tony and he had died. Think about the ripple effects of that. First of all, I was thinking Captain America would probably be pitched as a villain going forward to the world, right? I think when that news got out, he would become like beyond rogue. And I was just thinking that'd be wild. He'd have to become like a villain. And then think about the role that Tony plays from that point going forward in trying to stop Thanos. Then the whole stone collection thing via time travel. Does any of that happen? Does Thanos just straight win then? And is there anyone else on Earth that is able to, at least in the moment, come up with time travel? So that was an interesting scenario I thought about.
Well, that, and by the way, I mean, the entire arc we get with Peter would maybe never have happened, and you know, on the Spider-Man side of things.
Right. So I thought that was an interesting scenario. That's my answer. How about you?
Wow. You know,
kind of dark, dark, I mean, like I said.
Well, and I feel like that's so out of character for Steve. Like, if anything,
I know, but they portray it that he's like one swipe away. You know, he lifts the shield up in anger, and then he ends up plunging it into his chest.
Yeah.
But like, you know.
Well, and that's that is one of the things that I think made that scene from Falcon and Winter Soldier hit so hard. You know, it's because it's like the moment that to the extent Steve even considered that, you know, he wound up not doing it. Whereas like we don't see that moment happen with John Walker. But that's a good one. That's a good one. See, here I am. I'm trying to think of there are several that I've thought of.
You're trying to buy time. I can tell.
There are several that I've thought of over the course of different rewatches, and I'm trying to remember some. Some are kind of like the one that's coming to my mind right now is kind of boring, and I'm going to have to reserve the right to come back with a more sort of transformative one. But you know, you and I have talked about this some, and I can't remember if we brought this up in the Infinity War episode. But I still feel like there were ways in which, I'm not even going to go into that. I'm just going to say, what if they had gotten the gauntlet off of Thanos' arm on Titan in Infinity War?
I think about this all the time. That is a sensitive spot for you.
I think about it in different ways because, like, one, I mean, it's coming off, you know, whenever Quill wakes him up. Candace hates that scene. Every time I've got Infinity War on the background, she gets so mad at Star-Lord.
Right. I was going to say, why does she hate it? Because I think, Star-Lord does kind of blow it, but that's how they want you to feel.
Yeah, you know? I mean, he is in some ways like single-handedly responsible for the death of like trillions of people because he just
because
like,
he was mad about Gamora.
Yeah, he's got a temper.
But it's so well done that don't you buy it? Kind of, it hurts.
No, it does.
It sucks for him.
It's good because he's always, you know, like that's in character for Quill, right? Like he's not like a stoic kind of Cap type guy, or like Tony, where he's going to keep it all together.
I always hate when he says, "Did we just lose?" I'm like, "Yeah, we did just lose because you blew it 10 minutes ago."
Yeah.
You know, like, don't be the one to ask. You're the one that should be aware that it's your
fault.
Which
is why, I mean, and because you get the moment where I think he's realizing that in real time. But
by the way, he got so much hate online for that's not cool. Like in real life.
Oh, Chris Pratt.
People hated Star-Lords. Yeah. Well, not Chris Pratt, but they on Chris Pratt's Instagram would leave hate for Star-Lord because of that decision.
It's one of the things you actually said this several episodes ago in a different context, which was it's frustrating when people try to impose rationality into situations where people wouldn't necessarily be behaving rationally. Like the whole point, like we've all done things that, you know, we look back a day later and we're like, that was a stupid thing that I did. And when you're talking about someone that they've set up to be a character like Star-Lord, and he's in the middle of that situation and dealing with all those things, like, I definitely think it's believable. And I think that, like, it's not a good, I don't mean to critique it, because I don't think it's ever a good critique of a show or film to be like, well, that doesn't make any sense for them to have done it that way, because that's what makes a character actually real to me, is that they wouldn't just do the most logical thing at every turn. But
yeah,
anyway, the reason I brought that up is I do think it's interesting, because like I've thought about this, like if they had gotten the glove off, obviously Thanos would still be like, they wouldn't have been able to kill Thanos unless they were able to use the stones to do it. But I don't think anyone there had the power or the know-how
to hold it.
Yeah, or the imagination, you know, because I think even Tony eventually using the stones is very much informed by him having seen Bruce do it before, and they saw Thanos do it in Wakanda, and so they had a sense of how it worked. But like,
well, and it kills him. I think we're led to believe that he wouldn't have been able to hold it for like 10 seconds longer, you know?
Right. So I don't know what, like, I wonder, I mean, because you have to think about the Doctor Strange, like there's the one chance. And one of the realities had to have been them getting the gauntlet off. But I think, I mean, Thanos is still out there and he's still vicious. And without the stones, we've already seen one of the most powerful beings in the universe. So I've always been curious what that would have looked like. Like, would it have been sort of a race to just keep the gauntlet as a whole out of his hands? And anyway,
I've always struggled with the idea of Doctor Strange knowing, because people get really in the weeds on that. And it's the same feeling that comes up with Loki, where, again, it's the free will versus predestination thing. Like, if Doctor Strange knew, my mind just struggles with, okay, so is he just going along with it because that's what had to happen? If he knows it's going to happen, can he not find another scenario that he can tweak? Like, why go through the whole rigmarole of fighting Thanos in the first place? But then you're like, well, but that's what had to happen, so that's why he was doing it. But I am uncomfortable with that idea. My brain doesn't like it.
It is an interesting idea. Like, you bring up Loki, and I mean, the determinism aspect of it all, I think, is so fascinating, because the movie, you know, Marcus and McFeely are very aware of the fact, because they comment on it several times, that Strange never uses the Time Stone against Thanos. He just gives it over. And you think it's so easy, seemingly, to think of all these different ways that he might have used that prior to that battle, and even at the very start of that battle. I mean, he's talking with Thanos there at the beginning, and you think he maybe could have just frozen him and gone and taken, had someone go and take the gauntlet off while he's frozen in time. But again, I think that's what's interesting, is like, I think we're supposed to maybe understand that there were eventualities in which he tried all these things. And so then in the one that actually happens, is he just sitting back, like playing a part that he's seen? Or, you know, cause he does fight Thanos. Like, it's not like he doesn't put up a fight at all. He just sits there and watches it all happen. So
I love that you're bringing this up, because whether you know it or not, this is transitioning me perfectly into what I want to talk about. Okay. Because I put out that community question of the week ask, and I was surprised, okay, at the number of responses that I got that varied in degree of confusion about this era, from a few specific questions about Loki and What If to a couple of listeners literally saying, I don't understand what's going on. Like, I don't get What If. I'm trying so hard to understand what I'm watching and I don't get it.
Huh.
And I found that really interesting, because if there ever was a time for us to take a minute to clarify what we think is scientifically happening in the multiverse of the MCU, it's right now. Okay. Is that fair? This one question of someone saying, I just don't even understand what's going on, spurred me to a bunch of thoughts. Plus, we got some feedback on your guys' thoughts on What If episode one on our Instagram and Slack and stuff. And I was reading all of that and I got really passionate about this. So let me educate you for a second. Okay. This is an edumacation section from Kyle. This is your boy Kyle just putting on his science hat for a second. Okay.
I love this. I love this. Yeah. I feel like this is about to be like the Kyle version of a Robbie rant here. So I'm here for it.
This is going to get really nerdy for a second, okay? This is legitimately going to get crazy. Let's quickly go over, in real life, the scientific theory of the multiverse, okay? So here's what I want people to know. There's a theory, which means that it is not confirmed. Scientists are not sure this is a real thing. But in real life, there is a theory of a multiverse that says that at any given moment, like right now, we are on one universe that we are conscious of and aware of. But at any given moment, there is a trillion, infinite number of others happening at the same time that we just can't interact with. Okay? So even in science, though, Robbie, this is like enormously speculative. This has not been confirmed, but there's a couple crazy deep things about the beginnings of the universe and the origins of time and stuff that the multiverse theory confirms, if that makes sense. Like it checks out, but we don't know that's a thing, okay? So scientists don't know that there is actually other universes, and they don't know how drastically they would differ from ours or not. And that's important. So in one theory, maybe there's a universe that everything is exactly the same. You and I know each other. You and I have a podcast. All of the principles of physics obey the same laws on this universe, right? But the only thing maybe is different is, like, instead of me getting up and going left, I went right. And then how does my life differ because I went right instead of left, right?
Right.
Okay, it could be that, or it could be as major as, even the laws of physics aren't the same. Gravity, or how we know Earth, or the other planets. Maybe that's all different. Running parallel to us right now, but could be different. Scientists don't know that. So, like, the amount of speculation ranges a crazy amount there, okay?
Right.
Let me keep going here. Okay. So the laws of nature aren't even necessarily the same in these other universes. And scientists don't believe at our current level of knowledge that there is a way that we can ever interact with those other universes, okay? So that's where the MCU differs. We don't know if we'll ever be able to interact with that other version of Robbie.
Right.
So here's where it stops being kind of science theory and turns into science fiction now, right? Movies and movie writers have taken that concept and run with it in a ton of different ways, right? We've seen it in things like Interstellar and how a future human generation is able to come back and interact with the past human generation, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't really make sense because our brains can't wrap around it, but that's what they're playing with. Have you ever seen the movie Source Code, Robbie?
Oh, yes, I think I have. Is that
excellent? Jake Gyllenhaal film and Jeffrey Wright, who is now the voice of the Watcher. But it's about nothing happens after death. Nothing happens. And then finally, no spoiler, but like he gets into a multiverse type thing. So there's all these movies that are about it. And now in our terms, here's what Kang says about it. Okay. So if I haven't lost you there, Robbie, that's like the scientific theory of it. But here's in the MCU how I think they're handling it. Okay. And I said this a couple episodes ago, but in case you missed it, sorry, I'm talking so much.
No, I like this.
He Who Remains claims that sometime in the future, so like in 3,200, let's say, because he says the 30th century, I think, that he does discover a way to interact with these other universes. So I just said scientists don't think we can do that, but in 1,000 years, maybe we can. So right. He Who Remains figures out a way in 1,000 years to interact with other versions of himself, a version that, you know, went left instead of right, or a version that can jump and he can't, or whatever. Okay. I'm making this up, but he found another way to interact with versions of himself. And for the most part, those other versions of himself were friendly people. So imagine now he finds a way to get to this other universe and he runs into himself and they're like, oh my gosh. Like he says, I like your hair. Oh, I like your, you know, feet, whatever. Not feet. That's weird. Whatever. What else does he say? Hair and something else. What else does he say? Haircut, he says, and something else. Not feet. I don't think he commented on the feet. But anyways, he interacts with these other people. The problem is he also interacts with some other parallel universes where the people are not friendly. They see another version of themselves and they're like, oh crap, what are you doing here? Or in his case, they see another version of themselves and they realize, oh, that's just more land we can conquer. Right. Hence Kang the Conqueror. So as this goes awry, the alternate versions of himself that want to conquer things start fighting. And it causes in this, you know, future thing, multi-different universes to battle. So it's like version one of Kyle is fighting version two of Kyle, who's fighting version three, all for superiority because as humans, stuff goes wrong and our egos take over. So that's how Kang has explained what happened. In an effort to end this war so that everybody doesn't kill each other, He Who Remains found a way via Eliath to take all of those universes and sum them down into one. So there was just one timeline that won this war. So for, I don't even know how long, because time doesn't work the same, but for this era that we are in, one timeline was the only one that was working. Hence, even something like Captain America saying, don't worry, Bruce, I'll clip all of the branches.
Right.
Which is a fascinating tie to Endgame. So then Loki comes along and basically says, oh, if somebody is in charge of one timeline, does it feel worthless? Is there a glorious purpose if he just knows what happens to you? Right? That bothers Loki. That's the free will thing. And so at the end of Loki, we see in that decision to kill the guy who is keeping it one timeline, it's going to mess it up and branch it back into all of those universes that we had originally talked about. Hence, what if? So what if now is taking these other scenarios where we had one timeline, but somebody makes one choice that is different and it branches into a new parallel universe that we still don't know if they're able to interact with each other very easily. Okay. But it's a new parallel universe where in this one, Steve doesn't take the serum. Captain Carter does. Holy crap. Does that make sense? That's my best try at making people understand what's going on.
Wow. That was epic. Well done.
Too much? Sorry.
No, I feel educated. I actually do think that a lot of our folks probably appreciate that, because I have realized that we're getting into territory that, depending on the kind of stuff that you've read and watched over the years, maybe totally new to you or maybe kind of familiar. Like you're saying, it is sort of a sci-fi concept that's been explored more and more over the past decades. But if you're not someone that consumes that kind of stuff, then it could be something really weird to suddenly wrap your head around, especially in a world like in the MCU that has never really relied on that sort of thing until very recently with Endgame and then now with Loki.
And I don't want our listeners that felt that way to feel dumb, because it is legitimately confusing. Yeah. It is actually confusing to scientists, okay?
Well, and I mean, the in-game model of time travel was the source of a ton of confusion for a lot of people because they chose to do a different thing. And then we talked with Michael Waldron about how they had to kind of interact with that and work within that framework. So,
but that's my point, Robbie. Time travel in general is confusing because our brains have not figured that out. Mm-hmm. We have not figured out how to interact with these other parallel universes if they are happening. Hence, he remains saying it took 1,000 years to figure that out from where we are right now, right? But that's why it's confusing, because our brains don't get it.
Well, and
I mean, that's okay.
And it's so difficult to conceive of, because it's by nature an infinite thing, you know, like, because what we're watching and what makes these fun is everything is the same up until this point, and then there's a branch, and then we see what changes because of this one decision that was made differently. But really, like, if you want to get into it, then yeah, you're right. I mean, like, is there a world in which the right elements didn't combine to make life sustainable on Earth at all? Or, like, the gravitational pull is totally different? And then so, like, there's just, we're totally different species in general. And so it's like you go down the rabbit holes, and it can be such a wild but really fun conversation to have. But I think what is nice
about, that's why they say there literally is infinite possibilities,
right,
with what they could do,
because every single choice that's made or every single thing that occurs naturally could have happened differently or in the opposite way. But I do think that's what makes the What If series so fun, is that they zero in on these specific choices. And that's how the comics have been constructed as well. These comics started coming around in the 70s, spearheaded by Roy Thomas, who's sort of seen as the heir apparent to Stan Lee in a lot of ways at that point, and did a lot of, he's, you know, behind a lot of the big Avenger stories and all that kind of stuff. So a big Marvel Universe presence, a big architect of the comics universe from that period. And it started with really fun ideas using some of the bigger characters in the comics, like what if Spider-Man had chosen to be a part of the Fantastic Four? Or you had actually, which is interesting, what if Jane Foster had the power of Thor? You know, this was decades, obviously, before Jason Aaron's run that Love and Thunder is kind of pulling from. But just a lot of these, here are these little moments where something could have happened differently than it did, and then you just get to explore that specific, the specific consequences of that decision. So I think Kyle and I have seen the first couple episodes of What If, and it's staying very, very much in the spirit of those comics, in that it's always a really key decision that I think a lot of us would recognize, whether you're talking about in the comics world or especially here in the MCU, for those folks that have watched and rewatched these movies over and over again. And I think that there's something, it's like if you lean into that aspect of one moment that's significant being highlighted and sort of seeing the consequences from that, it becomes really fun, because it's a different way of digging in to the importance of these moments in the main MCU thread. And I think that the episode we're about to talk about with Captain Carter is a really clear example of that, that I think it does a really good job of kind of forecasting what I think we can expect from the show moving forward. But before we get into that, I wanted to talk a little bit about another one of our sponsors on this episode, and that's Ranger Station. So if you don't know, Ranger Station is a candle company founded actually by one of my really good friends and one of Kyle's friends in Nashville. It's a local business there for Kyle. I cannot say enough great things about Ranger Station. They hand pour all of their candles into these beautiful whiskey glasses to be used as such once the candle is gone. So instead of having this kind of gross glass thing with bits of wax on it that you then throw away, after you use a candle, they have all these incredible scents that, like, I have one burning right now as we're recording that I'm looking at, and it's making the room. I mean, the vibes are great. It's just all around. It's really adding to my podcasting experience here. But as soon as this candle is burned down, I'm going to have a really nice whiskey glass, which, spoiler alert, Robbie's a whiskey fan, so that works out really well for me. And each candle comes with a cocktail recipe that kind of matches the vibe of the scent that you got. So it's a really fun thing to order for yourself. It also makes an incredible gift to give to someone else.
Yes. Yes, my brother got one as a gift for Father's Day, and he absolutely loves it. And this was before we even knew we could partner with Ranger Station. He just legitimately loved the candle that much. And this is coming from someone who doesn't really drink. It still is the dopest looking whiskey glass when you're finished. And my candle smells unbelievable. I got the neroli and cedar candle. It's got bitter orange mandarin cedar in it. Are you kidding me? Like, listen to these scents. Let's freaking go. So I've loved my candle thus far, and so has my wife. So it makes a great gift. Everything they do is clean, safe, and sustainable, and it's highly fragranced. It's soy-based wax, clean and safe oil. So, hey, scent is the first thing you notice and the last thing remembered. And isn't life all about remembering our experiences? Let's freaking go. That's poetry. And so check out Ranger Station. If you use the promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK again, you can save 15% off your first order, limit one per customer. So go check out Ranger Station, use the promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK, and give the people in your life an excellent gift of an incredible smelling candle that turns into a whiskey glass. Let's go. Okay. Robbie, this is a perfect transition, what we were talking about, because I kind of went over the scientific theory of where we are at in the multiverse and what does the MCU say about the multiverse. But here's what made me most passionate about this week. Okay. Uh-huh. What if on a big picture here? I saw lots of comments on our Instagram and our social media at the FFW podcast that asked things like, was Captain Carter overpowered? Does it take away from Tony Stark that they were able to develop the Hydra Stomper? There was these questions of people feeling unsettled about it. And here's my 2 points I want to make, okay? I got to say both points. Uh-huh. That's what I was trying to say, people. When I was mad about the multiverse or I was unsettled about it, that's what's going to happen. For anybody who that's just now hitting, that's the point. On one hand, anytime you have an alternate version of something, it's going to naturally, as humans, make our brains feel less tied to the first thing. So people that are now struggling towards like, oh, does that belittle Tony Stark? Yeah, but that's the whole point. It's another scenario. Do you see what I'm saying? That's what I was trying to say. Like, it's going to make some portion of our audience feel a little weird to see Captain Carter do things that Steve was not able to do, right? Like, it's going to feel weird when you see these other versions, because up until now, we've all felt attached to the one universe and timeline that we knew, okay? So that's what's funny to me. I'm passionate about this. I see all these comments. I'm like, yeah, that's what I was trying to warn people about. And when I said that on Loki episode 5 and 6, everyone crushed me. Everyone crushed me when I said on Loki episode 5 that I just felt a little weird about all the other Lokis. And then when I said in episode 6, like, the finale was perfect, but I felt unsettled because of what it means. Everyone's like, oh no, the finale is perfect. What are you talking about? This is what I was talking about, guys. Okay.
Right.
So end of that rant. On the other hand, no, it didn't bother me at all. It doesn't bother me that Captain Carter's overpowered. It doesn't bother me that Tony Stark didn't come up with the suit in this universe, because it's a parallel multiverse. It's a different thing. So like I said, going back to the scientific theory even, wow, I'm excited. Ooh, calm down. Even with the scientific theory, right? We don't even know theoretically that the laws of physics are the same. So in Captain Carter's universe, she can jump over a castle. Yeah, but that's because that's a different one that is not interacting with the one we know.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm just saying, like, and by the way, it's animated and entertaining and looked beautiful. So that's why they did that. But I'm just saying, you could even scientifically explain that by just saying, we don't even know if the same laws of physics apply. So on one hand, yes, this is what I meant by it's going to bother some people, including me at times. On the other hand, no, this animated show of What If doesn't bother me if she can throw missiles or jump out of helicopters or whatever. You know what I'm saying? On the other hand, like, it doesn't bother my brain because it's an alternate reality. End of rant.
So that's a great point, because I think something that should be said, as I was kind of talking about what these comics have done I've always noticed that there are kind of two ways to approach these what if scenarios. One is, okay, this one thing happened differently, and now everyone else basically kind of behaves as they would have, except for that one choice being made differently. And what I mean by that is, like, in the case of this, you can maybe imagine a world in which the only difference, the only thing that happens differently, is Peggy and Steve have these role reversals. So Steve becomes kind of the agent that is, you know, consulting on these missions, and Peggy plays out the exact plot of Captain America: The First Avenger. And that would be so boring to watch, because guess what? We already have that movie. It's not going to make it super interesting to just flip those parts. So what these stories have done in the comics world is always take this little moment, like I was saying, that you're familiar with, but then they will make the consequences really extreme, which I could see really turning some people off that are wanting more of the kind of realistic thing I was just describing. But I think ultimately is going to be for the best, especially in like an animated context, like what you're talking about, that really lends itself to more kind of fantastical things. So I get what people are saying. I get that maybe there are things here with the Tesseract and the Hydra Stomper and the monster coming through the portal at the end, and all things we'll talk about here in a second, that feel like everything, like the volume's been turned up to 11. But like, I think that that's kind of the point. Like, it's supposed to be an opportunity to get really wild and have fun. And without spoiling anything, I think that the next two episodes do an even better job of that.
Yes, yes. That's what I was going to add. I was going to say that there was a handful of people out there feeling almost the opposite, which is that this was basically Captain America: First Avenger rerun with a few subtle tweaks. And I would say to that critique, that's probably fair. Like, this one was not super creative in the outcomes you're talking about. But right, if you enjoyed this one but felt that way, know that from Robbie and I, the second and third episodes, I thought, did an even better job of being more creative, pushing boundaries. It's not just a straight rerun of any one specific story. I enjoyed it, but I'm saying I think you'll enjoy the second and third one even more.
The second one especially is definitely not a rerun of anything.
Yeah, yeah. Let's start with What If and go through some of the details. I had to get those two rants out. Like, I watched this again on Wednesday when it came out with everybody else, and I took these notes down. And full disclosure, we're not recording until Sunday, and it's been killing me to interact with people online and not be able to do this podcast because of all what I just said. Like, I was really passionate about those two things.
It is. It's crazy to be on this kind of timeline because there, like, we've seen a lot of the conversations play out. Oftentimes when we're recording other episodes, and we were recording first thing in the morning after they've dropped, so no one's really had time to react yet. So that has been kind of funny, but
yeah, true.
But yeah, so we, like we said several episodes ago and also last episode, have gotten to see the first three episodes of What If. I just rewatched this first one right ahead of us recording, and I was thinking we could just kind of march through it a little bit, stop and talk about the things that hit us as being especially fun, things that we think are maybe worth noting. And without being too granular, I just wanted to say I thought even the intro is really fun. Like, I remember the first time
Death, taxes, and Robbie starting with a specific intro, no doubt.
I remember when I first watched the screener. One, I'm a big fan of Jeffrey Wright. I don't know if we've never talked about whether you're a Westworld fan, but he does really great stuff in that show. Obviously, he's one of these actors that's almost ubiquitous. He's been involved in so many different properties, but such a great pick for this character. Makes me really curious to see if Jeffrey Wright ever sort of takes this character into the live action realm of the MCU. But that's a conversation for another time. But I really like
the... Well, we're going to get into that. We're going to get into that over this this series of What If.
Man, I know. I'm excited to see how we get into that. Because there were some comments about that at the press conference that I think we already mentioned. But his voiceover work there, I think, is really strong. I thought the animation is cool, where they're showing, like, in this particular episode, going through what happened with Captain America, the First Avenger, and showing the kind of stylized version of Steve. And then like going into the actual episode, what I thought was really fun is the way that the Watcher is sort of speaking into the story and saying, okay, like right here at this exact moment is when the new timeline, the new universe is created.
Right. I do like them using the narration. I have so much to catch up on. First of all, I haven't seen Westworld, but I think I would like it. Isn't that Christopher Nolan's brother, Jonathan Nolan?
Yeah.
I think so. I probably should watch that. Secondly, Jeffrey Wright, like I said, shout out Source Code. Love that movie. Go watch it. It'll be fun for you. And thirdly, yes, I do really enjoy. I think this episode, even more than the next two, they do a good job of him interrupting and being a narrator there and like clarifying this is what we mean by this is where the moment, you know, changed.
Yeah. One thing that I can't remember, sorry if we brought this up, but I don't think we did. But in that press conference, Jeffrey Wright brought this point up over and over again. And I kind of love that. Is that he really thought of the Watcher as being like the ultimate MCU fan.
Right, like us.
Like us. Yeah. He's like the people that have watched these movies and shows over and over and have picked out the moments that are their favorites and have just gotten so in depth into this world. And he brought this up multiple times, how he felt like that's what he was bringing to this character, someone that just loves watching these people's lives play out and the story that's sort of being interwoven between all of their individual journeys. And I think that that's just kind of a fun frame for this entire series, because it sort of makes the Watcher more of an actual character rather than just a narrator.
He cannot and will not interfere. No, I've loved that too. For me, just big picture really quick at the top here. I mean, the animation, we got to talk about it for a second, because the animation for me was so different. Right. Mm-hmm. Like right off the bat. And I thought it was really cool, like really beautiful looking, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm just not used to things being animated in the MCU at all. Right. But like I said in our preview episode, I think a lot of our listeners are, because they're Star Wars fans and they know some of the other animated shows they like. But I thought the animation was done really well. And for me, a highlight even off the bat was just getting to hear these voices again.
Right.
And that becomes even more fun in the next two episodes as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, not to hijack your granular small picture. Those are like two things that right away struck me.
No. I mean, I think that that's worth talking about there. Even there in the credits, it was really fun for me to start seeing some of these names show up. Like, I would never have thought Stanley Tucci would come back for this.
So fun.
Like, I wouldn't have thought Toby Jones would come back for this, or Bradley Whitford.
So
like, these people that I'm like, okay, like, these are not just people that Disney's like leaning on because they're involved in these Disney projects on an ongoing basis. I mean, these are folks that I feel like were interested enough to come back and put in just a couple lines there. And
well, and to clarify, Hugo Weaving and Chris Evans are not there, correct?
Right. That is correct.
Okay, but then a shout out needs to go to the guys that acted in their stead.
Yeah.
They're incredible. I had to double take. Is Red Skull actually Hugo Weaving, that they use some of his old dialogue at times?
So what's interesting about that is, and we can talk about this kind of as we go some too, but there was a little bit of pushback against some of the voice acting performances in this from folks that thought, which I think is maybe fair, that just because you're a good actor doesn't necessarily mean that you're a trained voice actor.
Yeah, I could see that. I heard that a lot with Bucky.
Yeah.
Actually.
I heard that with Sebastian Stan and I think like there are maybe arguments to be made that I think by and large Hayley Atwell did a really, really good job. I think there are maybe a couple moments.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, so Chris Evans didn't return. Hugo Weaving not only didn't return for this show, but Hugo Weaving actually has not returned since Captain America the First Avenger. So what's funny is...
Wow, right, you told me that, yes.
Ross Marquand is the guy that played Red Skull in Infinity War and Endgame. He is a famous voice actor. And it's funny because it's the one character that it's really kind of okay for them to have recast because he's wearing so much makeup that it doesn't really matter what he looks like. And he obviously
I didn't
does.
Even know that, full disclosure, until yeah. you told me.
I mean, he does an incredible Hugo Weaving impression.
yeah, he does.
Like, it's but, and that's the other, I mean, it's funny because you can tell, and I could tell, like, watching back this time, the folks that are the trained voice actors, just in, like, how it kind of clicks a little bit differently. Like, they just, you can tell they have a sense of how this stuff translates. And the guy that plays Steve Rogers is another, like, very famous voice actor named Josh Keaton, who has done a ton of, like, cartoon video game work. He maybe most famously voiced Spider-Man in the Spectacular Spider-Man show from about 10 years ago. But he did an incredible Chris Evans impression.
You do wonder if voice acting and live acting is a slightly separate skill. Like, I guess I never really thought about that. I just assumed if you're an actor, you'd be good at voice acting. But that's probably a fair critique, that if you haven't done a lot of voice acting, there may actually be dedicated voice actors that actually could do it better than you
yeah.
at first.
Well, I think it's, again, because we're talking about our music career so much in this episode, I think about it a lot, even just in terms of playing a song live and recording it in the booth, where you have like none of the energy, you have none of the chemistry to kind of rely on. Like, you can't, you know, like when you're on stage playing something, you can sort of match not only the audience, but also the folks that you're playing right. with. And it's just, it's almost something you don't even think about in the same way.
That's why you need a producer like me just to give you that vibe, to encourage you, you know, to fix that for you. Give you that chemistry live.
but no, I mean, so I do, like, there's a, we'll have to post this, but if you haven't seen yet, there's this hilarious video going around of Sebastian Stan recording these parts. Have you seen this?
Yes. Yes. I loved it. Someone posted it on Twitter.
It's so funny because he's just like Luke. If you've ever spent a day in a vocal booth, you do, like, at the end of it, feel insane because you just have this voice in your ear saying, okay, now try it like this. Okay, now try it, like, except do this little inflection right here. And it's like for hours and you're just sitting here in this little tight space. And again, it's just a totally different, not saying I know anything about voice acting, but even just that dynamic is so different that I have to imagine you're just sitting there and then someone's like, okay, they've just said this line, now you say it like this as a response. I think it just takes a bit of a different skill set almost, which I actually didn't think Sebastian Stan struggled that much in this episode in the way that I feel like others pointed out. But I do think you can maybe tell that he wasn't totally comfortable with that.
No, I think that's fair. Okay, Robbie, before we dive into the granularness of the plot like you want to and just kind of go through it.
We're going through still by still.
Right. Support for Friends From Work is brought to you by Manscaped. Hello, here we go. Who is the best grooming champions of the world, okay? They sent both Robbie and I the performance package, and let me tell you, it's pretty legit. Robbie, it's some pretty nice stuff, right?
It is nice stuff. Like, it's, I was so not nice. Expecting, one, I wasn't expecting that much. They were super generous in what they provided us ahead of time. But also, yeah, the quality of that stuff is top tier. It's nice.
Look, everyone out there is thinking,
feeling pampered over here.
Guys, I'm a guy. I don't need to shave body hair. I don't need to shave my face that much. Whatever. Let me tell you, I got done trimming up. And I said to my wife, as much as this sounds stupid to say, I literally do feel like I have more confidence that I feel groomed. Like, wow. I got, like, the nose hair trimmer, the ear hair trimmer.
Yep.
I trimmed up my really hairy chest. Too much detail. I know, TMI. And I felt like a king. I felt like a king. And so I was one of the first people to try the Lawnmower 4.0. I was blown away by the performance. The craftsmanship and details are seriously next level.
I feel like for the longest time, I used to use, like, these electric razors back when I first started shaving. And then for the last 10 years or whatever, I've just been using a straight razor.
Yep.
And I haven't even really touched anything like this for so long. And it was so nice because I had some experience where those things could lead to, like, razor burn, or, like, you can nick yourself if you're trying to get too creative there.
No doubt.
And
no doubt.
These products are, you know, it's like if you you look in, there's a whole little manual there to tell you how you're supposed to go about utilizing these. And yeah, I'm not as manly as you are, Kyle, so I don't have like the Gaston level chest hair.
That's true.
But I still beard trimming too. Beard trimming and look, I am getting like I'm getting to that phase where nose trimming and ear trimming is sadly a necessity.
No doubt.
We get it. This is not maybe the thing that you're most excited to talk about. But you know what? Like everyone's got to do some grooming. It has to happen. So you're going to use something and you might as well use the best. And these products are genuinely the best that I've ever used. And you can get this discount if you use the Friends From Work code. So really, it doesn't make any sense not to. Give it a go. Let us know what you think.
No doubt. So boost your confidence with this new Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer. And yeah, just enjoy the smooth shave. Get 20% off, 20% off, and free shipping with the code FRIENDSFROMWORK at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code FRIENDSFROMWORK. If you haven't noticed, all of our codes are FRIENDSFROMWORK, so it's easy for you to remember. Unlock your confidence with the new Lawnmower 4.0 from Manscaped.
Okay, so we've covered some of the big picture things. These episodes are pretty short, so it's not going to take us very long to go through what happens, but I think it is kind of fun to see, particularly where that branch comes. So I thought it was fun that here it's Peggy's decision to not kind of go up into the observing room, but instead to stay down. And by staying there, which is in and of itself sort of a like confidence that previews this version of Peggy Carter, you know, like instead of being relegated to the sidelines in some ways like Peggy was in the original MCU narrative, here she's like kind of refusing to be ushered off, and she's you know, kind of from that point on taking center stage in this episode. One thing that I did think about though, and I was curious to get your thoughts on, you know, by being down there and seeing the guy about to trigger the explosion, I would have thought that Peggy being down there would maybe have prevented Erskine's death. But instead, I feel like Peggy being down there and noticing the thing happening before it happens, more people wind up dead, right? Isn't that kind of weird? Like, because Erskine still dies, Steve winds up kind of crippled, and Tommy Lee Jones' character, who I'm forgetting the name for in this moment, also dies, which kind of makes way for Bradley Whitford to head up the SSR.
Yeah, but because it's an alternate thing, that decision did maybe lead to more people getting hurt, but that wasn't her conscious choice.
No, it's definitely not her fault. I just think it's funny because if you know, talking about what if moments that we've had, like you do anytime you're it's like rewatching The Lion King and wondering how they could have kept Mufasa from dying or something. Like when it comes to that moment in the first Avenger, right? It's like, oh man, like if they had just known, like if Erskine could have just survived, like these little things that would have gone differently. And I would have always thought like, oh yeah, if they had like a little heads up, then, you know, maybe they would have been able to have like a totally different super soldier program. But I guess to maintain the reality in which there's only one super soldier, at least Erskine still had to die. But it was just on the second watch through struck me as kind of funny that it was like actually, I think, sort of a net loss in terms of the lives and of the people associated with that project.
I think the death of Mufasa was traumatizing for anyone our age, don't you? I mean, that like haunted children forever.
Yeah.
One thing I've learned is do not be the parents of a famous Disney character in any of these movies, because it never goes well for them. Never goes well.
You brought up last episode, I think, you brought up Aladdin and maybe Beauty and the Beast. And
yep.
I was shocked you didn't bring up Lion King, because that's my personal favorite from the era. So I'm glad that we kind of got to circle back to that.
See, I'm weirdly not a Lion King guy.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I'm so obsessed with the classic Disney stuff, but the music in Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid, like, far and away surpasses Lion King for me.
Well, so, which is hilarious because
hot take.
We'll have to debate that another time for sure, because I don't know, man. Lion King is really is. I think Lion King is.
You
is
have
one of the
no
best.
Shot debating Disney music with me. Trust me, you would stand no chance.
Well, Disney music. Again, we can't get into this, but I will say it's funny you bring up Aladdin because you know there is the connection that we talked about in our first Avenger episode, where Alan Menken, who famously wrote a lot of that kind of Disney Renaissance era stuff that you're referencing, wrote the Star Spangled Man with a Plan song. So
right.
it links us back.
See, and we're back, people.
And we're back.
We clipped that branch. We're back on the main timeline.
So with that decision, obviously Peggy winds up being the one to take the serum. I did notice this time, I didn't on the first watch, that I think Howard says something about how like bullets won't mix with the process well. And that's why, because at first I was like, well, Steve's hurt, but they could still like, you know, throw him in there.
Put him in there. Yeah.
But.
And maybe that'd heal him.
Right. That's what I thought initially. But I thought that that was kind of a good point that they made or a good bit of dialogue to sort of explain why it had to be Peggy.
And they have Peggy coming out super buff.
Right.
Like the animation is that she's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is so funny with Steve still being so small.
Right.
But yeah, I thought it was a really fun reimagining of that scene. And then we just start getting different versions of that all the way through the episode. Like right then it goes to the punching bag scene that we saw in the Avengers with Steve, except it's Peggy there. And I thought that, you know, one difference is in the first Avenger, I thought that it was kind of fun the way they explain him using the shield is that he gets that car door and that's
right.
the newspaper picture that makes him famous.
Yes.
And so, you know, but she didn't have that moment. So I thought it was kind of fun that instead it starts with her like throwing all of these weights into the wall as like part of her workout.
Yeah.
And that sort of transitions into the shield she gets from Howard.
You know, I'm sitting here listening to you talk about that and the thought that's coming to my mind is, I wonder if you and I just a little bit viewed this one differently. Because I was actually struck by the lack of differences in this story, I think. Maybe more than you were. Like, especially when you see the context, again, I keep saying it, but the second and third episode to me are pretty far out there in how different it gets. But
right.
Really, as you're going through this, I'm thinking there's a lot that's not that different. I know a couple people wrote that in, but like you're saying, like the punching bag scene, the creation scene, they go over the Hydra plan and stuff. There's little changes, but you know what I'm saying? She still gets a shield. There was just a few things that were less different in this one almost.
No, I think that's true.
The
and
Tesseract
like
is
said,
still the main focus.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there are things that, you know, there's obviously no plane that crashes, but she does still wind up kind of out of commission for 70 years. I think this one feels a little bit different because of just the way that it's situated.
And they use Loki's entrance in the Avengers as her coming out of the portal. Oh, that was kind of interesting.
Right. But no, I think that's a good point. Like, I think this episode feels at least unique from the other two in that it is way more of an origin story and it's way more of a, instead of Captain America, a Captain Carter thing. So that kind of requires a certain level of similarity because if she doesn't get the shield, then at that point it's just a really strong Peggy Carter, right? Like it doesn't carry the same kind of like, oh, it's Captain America, except it's Peggy. It's just like, oh, this is a super strong secret agent now. And so
I
think
that's fair.
They did like, they had to have a certain level of crossover.
That's fair.
But I hear you. And I do think that like, to me, they towed the line. Well, it's interesting to me that I've seen people feel like it was either too much or too little, because in my mind, that's always a sign that it's probably just right. If you feel like you're kind of triggering people on both sides of the spectrum, but because there were differences like what you talked about with her being overpowered. I mean, her like flying through airplanes with her body,
or the massive monster at the end. I mean, that's the biggest twist.
Yeah, I mean,
by the way, the monster at the end, was that supposed to be at all a play on the monster at the beginning of Guardians 2?
Oh,
did you think that at all or not?
I didn't think that. I thought it was more just like a sort of Hydra monster. I know there was some debating on our Slack about whether it was a particular monster from like Doctor Strange or from the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show. I thought it was.
Did you get the vibes at all that I was talking about? Or can you see what I'm saying?
I can see what you're saying.
Just because they also call it an interdimensional monster in Guardians 2, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's fair. So maybe, yeah, I mean, that would be kind of a fun tie-in. It's hard because we only ever see tentacles, right? Like, we never see... Oh, no, that's not true. We do see, like, the teeth on the inside, which I guess are kind of like the ones...
Which looks similar.
Guardians 2. Yeah, good point. Yeah. I would be very fine with that connection there.
I don't think the point, by the way, with any of this stuff is to get as nitty-gritty like I just did about the monster. I just meant I got vibes of it, but it doesn't change anything for me if it's an actual monster from Guardians 2 or not. It's just a Easter egg kind of like, hey, right. That kind of reminded me of the Guardians 2. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's a different kind of thing.
Yeah. No, I do think, I think it's just fun because there are Easter eggs and that could very well be at least like a light one. And again, without kind of beating a dead horse, the next two episodes are crazy with the Easter eggs, way more so than this one. But in terms of just some of the things that I liked about the way this played out, I talked about earlier about how... the Captain Carter thing resulted in the deaths of more people than I would have expected. But I do like on the flip side, the difference between having someone like Steve, who is just kind of he's a good man, as Dr. Erskine always said, getting the formula and then having to figure out everything else that goes with being a soldier, contrasted with Peggy, who has risen to where she is through her own skill and talent. And so already knowing all of the kind of soldiering side of things and then getting the formula and how you see that play out differently, because like there are ways in which she sort of gets a jump on where Steve was, like Schmidt or the Red Skull never winds up with the Tesseract in the way that he does with the First Avenger because Howard and Peggy intercept it before it ever gets back to him. And the same thing with the fact that Bucky never gets, like, he doesn't get lost or experimented on in the same ways. And that leads to another thing that I think has maybe been the most talked about thing that I've seen from this episode, which was everyone thinking, myself included, that the scene that we got that most mirrored that scene in First Avenger, which was the train scene, was going to end with a Steve turning into a Winter Soldier situation. And it obviously didn't do that. But when we were watching it, Candace and I were both like, oh, is this about to be like, this is kind of fun. Like Steve's going to have his own Winter Soldier thing. And instead,
I ultimately liked the play on Iron Man more. I think understand it'd be fun, but then like that would fall under the category of not that different. If it was Steve that falls and turned into that. Kind of
like, so what I thought that was one with of the that older that hasn't choices. Already been done with Bucky.
Yeah, right.
And I thought that was really fun and such a fun way of kind of reimagining Howard and that, you know, because we did get a sense in the way he's at least represented in Iron Man 2 that he was very much the kind of predecessor to Tony in the things that he was coming up with, but just was limited by certain technologies, by the technology of my day.
Little quote here.
But I really liked that it was tied to the Tesseract specifically, because if you think about it, the arc reactor doesn't exist yet in this.
Yes.
So I really like that. And that's why it doesn't belittle Tony in my mind.
Okay. But problem there is, doesn't the Tesseract, I guess, let me think about this. In Captain Marvel, we see it being a power source, don't we?
Yeah. Right.
But the Tesseract is more the portal always, you know, the bring things in between galaxies, the dimensional thing.
Well,
but you're right. In Captain Marvel, it does have
and
power.
And in the Avengers, I mean, that's the whole thing, right? Is Fury's like
unlimited power. Right. Yeah.
So I think they don't fully understand its capabilities is how I've always read those early. And I think Captain Marvel in some ways was trying to be a bridge between those different understandings of the Tesseract.
Mm-hmm. Because they're ultimately trying to use it for light speed travel, which is kind of almost like a portal, you know?
Right.
Right.
But she ultimately ends up getting power from it, and it's a core kind of too. So you're right. It probably is a bridge there. It's that's been one of those ones that's kind of been a little bit not defined from the beginning. You know, like the Power Stone, we understand what that is.
Right.
Right. We get it. The Time Stone, we get it. But the Tesseract's always been one that's had a little bit of gray area. Is that fair?
No, for sure. I feel like in some ways the Space Stone, the Reality Stone, and the Mind Stone are all like a little bit casualties of having been introduced so early that they
that's
didn't,
fair. Yes.
You know, they just didn't have a clear sense. Like the Power Stone, the Time Stone, right. It's very like the boundaries are kind of very clear because I think True. By that point they knew what they were heading towards. I did think that was just kind of a fun because that way it's not like, oh, he, because I think Tony's yes. big invention was sort of taking the arc reactor and using it to fuel the Iron Man suits and sort of everything from there.
But either way, Robbie, I agree with you. If that's the case, though, we're going to have to get over the belittling of Tony Stark thing a little bit.
Oh, no, for sure.
Because it's a separate deal, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's a good, I mean, because I think there's still like there's a reason why the main story is the main story. Like it yes. works in a certain way. And I think one interesting question for all of these is going to be like, you know, is it ever going to be like, is there ever going to be a reality? Yes. You know what I mean? That doesn't just feel like a knockoff on some level.
And that's why, Robbie, now that I can talk about this a little more openly, this is what we meant by you and I are really, really fascinated to see how does this show play into the canon, right? Like, remember we kept hinting at that in the preview, but we couldn't say much detail to that.
Right.
But here's a perfect example of, like, when I did the Q&A, I got a lot of questions of, do you think we'll ever see Captain Carter in the MCU timeline that we know? And I started thinking about that. I don't think we'll see an animated version of her, not like Space Jam, right? Like where right. she'll be like going around. But do I think it's possible that a Captain Carter does make an appearance during all of this multiverse thing? Like actually Haley Atwell, but playing Captain Carter in a live action thing? Yeah, I do think that's possible. And that's where you and I, our mind starts racing, uh-huh. saying, how long is this multiverse thing, quote unquote, going to be open, right? Like for how long, how many years is it going to be fair game to expect Haley Atwell to show up as Captain Carter, right? And will they ever, quote unquote, close it to where we say, nope, we're going back to one timeline and Captain Carter won't show up with the Avengers. And then, Robbie, my mind goes to, do they run the danger of us falling in love with a specific character? Like, let's say you fell in love with Captain Carter. And then when the timeline gets closed, do we no longer have that version of her? And is that a bummer? Do you see what I'm saying? The big picture-ness of right. all of this is wild, crazy, and in some ways a little bit dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, so we've talked about this some whenever I was going through at several points, the Secret Wars stuff with Jonathan Hickman and everything that led up to that. And I won't go into all of that here. I was just going to mention that there are holdovers. Like there are characters that had been in alternate universes that do make it into the main 616 Marvel Comics universe continuity.
Right. At the end or something.
Right. Yeah. Like, and there are very specific ones and kind of for specific reasons. And
for the record, I think that's what's going to happen. That's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. I could see that with, like, Captain Carter. I'm not sure that I love that idea.
Think it should be all or nothing?
I think it just depends. Like, I really, here are two. I've talked about the Miles Morales one before and how much I thought Miles Morales was such a great character in the Ultimate Spider-Man universe. Obviously, like, there have been, like, Bendis and Ahmed have both done really, really great jobs writing him in the main continuity. But I think something gets really weird when you divorce a character from, like, their own reality like that in terms right. of just the way that they interact and the way that it kind of feels believable and real. And I think, like, the other example of that for me was, like, there was a story from 7 years ago or so called The Death of Wolverine, where Wolverine finally leaves the Marvel continuity for years. Except as soon as Wolverine dies, like, oh, guess what? We've got like the old man Logan version of Wolverine from another reality that now comes in and basically just acts as Wolverine, except he's really old. And then for like 5 years. So I'm like, well, now you don't even really feel it's what, like what we've talked about with like Vision or Loki to some degree, except for here, it's like, well, now you can pull this alternate version. Well, I guess that is basically Loki. Anyway, my point is, I just don't know how I feel about that.
Right. I think we run the risk here of beating a dead horse on that topic because I keep bringing it up. But with this being What If episode one, I'm just trying to get everyone's minds right, get their mind right, get it framed well with what we're talking about. Because this show, you can view it kind of one of two ways. You can view it as here is a fun, just really enjoyable animated side story of all these alternate decisions that could have happened in some other universe. And it's kind of fun, right? And you can view it that way and it's going to be really entertaining and kind of a side story. It's going to be hard for it to rank really high in like an MCU rankings because it doesn't carry a lot of consequence if that's how you're viewing it. Right. But if the show ends up ultimately trying to be more than that, like an introduction of Captain Carter that goes forward, or the multiverse does stay open and this kind of stuff becomes very normal, then I think how you view it is going to change and it's going to carry different weight. And then it can't just be a side story that's like, hey, that's a fun like thing to have on.
Right.
Am I making sense? Like if the show is trying to be something different, then I'm going to have to view it differently. And I still am not sure of that yet. That's why I keep bringing it up.
Well, I think what's fun is we just don't know, although, like we've said, they've hinted that it has consequences. But again, they wouldn't ever say, by the way, none of this matters. Please watch.
I also just say that because I still at my core think that Kevin Feige knows all this stuff that we're saying about even the old man Logan thing. And I think they're going to keep this entire era of the MCU really focused on the main timeline, even though those other things are open. I think they're going to. So
yeah.
If that's the case, I think What If is going to be more side story-ish. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but do you see what I'm saying there?
Well, so yeah, what I think is interesting is that it could still be both. Like, I think you're right. The focus will stay on our main reality because I don't think it's going to be fun to, like, there's too much built, there's too much world building that's gone on within our specific group of folks in their environment to just abandon that, to hop everywhere. I just don't think that's what's going to happen in the films and live action series. I think even the fact that this is animated says a lot about the long-term significance of these new versions of characters that we're meeting. What I am sort of predicting at this point, and you know, I don't predict very often because I'm just kind of opening myself up to being proven wrong later since we're going on the record here. But I think that the most I would imagine seeing like a live action Peggy Carter or Captain Carter situation would be if we had a Secret Wars film that was the equivalent to Infinity War, which is, I mean, because you have to remember, Infinity War, when it came out, was just so far from anything that had ever been done. I mean, they talked about that before the first Avengers, and then Infinity War, in terms of combining all these different properties and putting all these characters on screen and mix and matching teams. But now, you know, like Marvel's going to at some point have to try and one up that in terms of sheer spectacle. And I think that what that could end up being is the same way we felt whenever we saw like Thor and Guardians meet for the first time in Infinity War is what we could potentially feel whenever we see like some, without any spoilers,
like Captain Carter meets Vision,
like Captain America.
Yeah.
Or I mean, you know, like those kinds of moments where it's like, whoa, like this is crazy. But I think that because Secret Wars, the event book itself, is a lot of that. There are a lot of these, like, because like, for instance, in that book, there's something called the Thor Corps, which is basically like an army or like a police force made up of Thors from all the different realities.
That's incredible.
So it's like you have these things where long term it could be like what we're saying, like belittling of the character, but it's not because you feel like you're in this one event and then it's over and you're back to your main Thor. And that's kind of how I could see it happening. And that's how I feel like I would like it to happen. I don't personally feel like there is any need to carry over any alternate versions of people back into the main continuity, but
woo.
You know, who knows? What do I know?
Look, this was a massively big picture episode. We were zoomed out for a lot of this. Next week, when you see the episode in a couple of days, you'll know what we're talking about. I can't wait to break down the nitty gritty of next week's episode.
We'll absolutely
stop beating a dead horse on the alternate reality stuff. We're just, again, trying to frame what's happening here in my mind and like trying to figure out where are they taking this thing on a big picture scale. But like the next 2 weeks, fun episodes that I can't wait to talk on a small picture scale.
Well, and I do want to say before we totally leave Captain Carter behind, it's hard for me to gauge this because of how much I not only love Captain America, the character, and love that movie, which, by the way, I watched the Legends episode for Peggy Carter before this, which in a lot of ways is just a like summary of the Captain America movies. So I loved it like as much as any Legends episode I've watched. But it just like it's a fun. I think what's nice about this is it's a return to an era of the MCU that we only had a very brief glimpse of. It's not one that's been really mined a lot. So I thought that was a lot of fun. They really played, like, the action was very fun to watch.
Yes,
like,
it was.
Like, very well done.
Which is another reason why I was okay with Captain Carter seemingly being overpowered, because it was fun to see. It just looked cool.
Right. And I think, sort of like we said about the first Avenger, there was a certain level of kind of cheesiness and hokiness to this one that I'm willing to allow for, given the time period it's trying to capture. You know what I mean? Like it's not only doing the like Indiana Jones, let's punch some Nazis thing, but it's also doing the like classic comic booky, like very over the top thing in a way that I think is a bit different from what we see happen in the next two episodes as well, but I think is very fitting of this genre. But so in general, I wanted to say like, I probably liked this one a bit more than you, just given our own kind of tendencies and the movies we're, and characters we're drawn to. I do think, like, I think I said this on the episode last week. For me, each episode has gotten better as it's gone. So I love the episode we're going to get next week, and I think people should be very excited about it. I think I enjoyed the third one even more. So you and I might kind of debate that some, but I think what's fun is this is very much like, it's a great intro to the series. I don't think it's indicative of the series as a whole. So I know some people maybe didn't feel like this was as like imaginative or as dark or funny as maybe they were hoping it would be. And if that's you, I wouldn't get nervous quite yet.
Absolutely. If you guys are fans of this podcast, there are a lot of ways you can support us. First of all, check out our sponsors. Check out Squarespace, Ranger Station, and Manscaped. But also, follow us on social media at the FFW Podcast and hit us up there. Most importantly, I think, just thanks for listening. Keep listening. You can rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast wherever you get podcasts. And tell your friends about our podcast. We'd love to keep it growing. Lastly, we have a website, the FFW Podcast, where you can get a lot more of this information. You can also buy some merchandise there. Get your Friends From Work merch. Let's go. And you can donate to the podcast on there as well. I just recently, Robbie, updated to include a join Slack button on our front page. So I've gotten so many emails of people saying, I don't know where to find the Slack. That's our fault. It is in the show notes, but it is also at the FFWpodcast.com. So now there's a button there. And we're maybe looking to add a little update to the website for Robbie's recommended reading, maybe a little comic book reference. We're working on that. We'll get there too. So thank you guys so much. This is kicking off a new era for Friends From Work. I can't wait to dive into season 2.5 with you. And thank you so much for listening. It means so much to us. And so we'll see you next week at the same place, same time, and we'll talk about What If Episode 2, which you're going to love, next time on Friends from Work.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.